language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the server, that's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free sting.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton. Look in my
eyes, what do you see? Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN on the Trump listener line. On text line, on Twitter, at Pete Creighton 1. Brian McDonald on the other side of the glass, the master controls, at Sack by B-Mac. On the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975, ESPN975 app, ESPN975.com. Tell Google, tell Alexa, play ESPN975. Take us with you everywhere you go. You know, you heard us talk with Sean Higgs, picks and parlays, give you some college basketball insight. Well, you know what time it is? It's time for the ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5 fifth annual Bracket Madness. Presented by Bud Light, supported by Rudy's Barbecue. We'll be giving away tons of prizes worth over 50 bucks each. Did I say it's all free? It's free!
Prizes. I think you just said it now.
It's free! Prizes include gift cards to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, Chewy's, The Burger Joint, and more. Go to ESPN975.com and register now. Bracket Madness, presented by Bud Light, America's favorite light lager.
I'm kind of jealous that I'm not eligible to win any of those, because some of the live reads for Frankie's and Valencia's have made me really want to visit those establishments.
I'm a fan of pizza at Frankie's.
Yeah.
Fan.
I've heard the food was pretty good. The Italian nachos received rave reviews from the people I heard.
The food is all right. Yeah, you'll like food at Frankie's Kitchen. I like Chewy's.
Yeah, I do too.
I have not yet been to Valencia's.
No, I know I haven't either, but I've heard BK talk it up, and it sounds pretty good. It's actually usually, depends on the route I take, but usually it's right here on my drive in to work.
Oh, it's Heath Local?
Yeah. There's a Valencia's right there. Well, it's right by where we used to work over at the flagship.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that little shopping center just before it. If you're coming up 59, if you're headed 59 south, that little shopping center where there's
the one where the Prince's Burgers used to be?
No, other side of the highway. Other side of the highway.
Oh, where
same side of the highway where that our building was when we worked.
Okay, yeah, there used to be some kind of healthy eatery.
Yeah, there's like a cookie shop over there. I think it's Tiff Treats or something. There's like a Potbelly sandwiches.
I know the Potbelly and the Starbucks is next to the Mercedes.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So that's where it is. Valencia is right there. Yeah.
Okay, something to hit up. Where is the burger joint?
That I've actually ordered there through DoorDash, but I have never been there in person, so I don't know exactly where it is.
All right, because that.
But it's within the delivery distance of where we work, so it's got to be within at least 5 miles. I think
I'll have to put that on the checkpoint list as well. As somebody who lives in, as you all say, East San Antonio,
I was going to go East El Paso, but close enough.
I'm not familiar with all the different places around here. But I have found that usually you guys tell me, oh, go here, it's good. And I'll go there, I'm like, oh, I'm probably going because I'm stuffing my face, you know. There is a Brazilian steakhouse that's right here.
Mm-hmm.
First time I went there was with David Gow.
Okay, is that when you got hired on?
No. It was not when I got hired on. But we did have a corporate event at that. It was awesome. I was like, you know what? I'm calling up like three of my friends. And, you know, taking the boss, you know, not our boss, but the boss. Taking the boss.
AKA your wife?
Yes. And, you know, the mother of children. And we went over there and we had a fantastic. It's
there are a few restaurant experiences I enjoy more than a Brazilian steakhouse. I mean, hashtag not a sponsor, but Fogo de Chao, Shamagusha. There's some really outstanding ones here in the city of Houston.
Yeah. There's a new one that's opened up by me out in Katy that I want to go try. They're not what you'd call a discount Brazilian steakhouse.
No, I don't know if I would want to eat at the discount Brazilian steakhouse.
This is not a discount place.
They shouldn't be.
But I do want to go check it out because it is. It's right there on the 99, and I want to go check it out. It's called Gaucho's.
Yeah. I think I've hit up. I think every one of them in a 100-mile radius of here. It feels like, but yeah, they're great.
That is on my March hit list. Now the reason being is the mother of children is not a big steak eater. She is not going to eat $100 worth of steak.
Yeah, my wife isn't either.
She's not going to eat $30 worth of
steak. The last time my wife and I went to Fogo de Chão, I, of course, got the full Brazilian experience. Yeah, my wife ordered a cauliflower steak to let you know where we were at.
Yeah, no, the last time we went to a Brazilian steakhouse, the first thing that she did was she went to the salad bar.
Yeah, my wife would do the same thing. Yeah.
And as they're bringing around every, cut of steak, she's like, I'm like, what is wrong with you? We're here to eat steak. They will bring you any cut, any steak, cooked any way you want. And it doesn't matter. You can just try a little bit of everything. If you don't eat it, it doesn't matter. Well, you know, I don't want to be wasteful. I'm like, you know what we're going to pay to eat here, okay? Don't talk about being wasteful.
Yeah, a part of their business model works around you being wasteful because they know they might cut off pieces of meat that you never even try.
Yeah, so just eat. So instead, what she'll do is she'll see me with food. Oh, let me try a bite of that.
Ugh.
Let me try a bite of that. Oh, I like this. Could I have some more? I'm like, I'm calling the guy over. No, I don't want my own.
Sounds like there have been many arguments over this in the Creighton household.
This is why I generally don't take her to places like that. She's not a big steak eater. Now, if I took her to a place where they served grilled salmon all day, you know, oh, sure, she's in heaven. But she's not a big steak eater. Whereas me, it's like, we have 17 different cuts of steak. I'll have all of them.
Yes, I will try every single one
twice.
Of them. On the, yeah, exactly.
And bring me the ones wrapped in bacon.
You have a Ron Swanson moment. I will have all the bacon and eggs.
You know, was it you look at the menu. Yes.
Yes. Hand it back. Circle the entire menu.
But the bracket madness is a lot of fun. You can follow along, compare how you're doing against all of us here, and you know, talk some smack with your friends. Hey, call us up and talk some smack with us. You're doing better than we are. And you get a chance to eat some great food, again, on us, with some free gift cards. So have fun. Get on to the bracket madness. All right. Let's cut this segment early so that we can come back in. And I know you wanted to do a little Astros fill in the blank. We debuted this last week, I think it was the first time.
A week or two ago with Texans. Yeah, we did some Texans topics.
So we did some Texans. We'll do some Astros fill in the blank with BMAC next.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, real quick before we get into the segment, minute here for Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. Look, Dr. Ben changed my life because I spent every other month for 20 years with a sinus infection. Can't breathe, hacking up all that nasty stuff, living on antibiotics. Nobody wants to live on antibiotics. Figured that was just how life was going to be. Multitude of doctors in two different states, and every time I get a sinus infection, they just send me a Z-Pack. And if that didn't work, they'd give me something stronger. But nobody ever wanted to know why. Nobody ever tried to fix the problem until I met Dr. Ben 3.5 years ago. Sat down, talked to him. He's got a beautiful state-of-the-art facility up in North Houston. And, I don't know, I talked to him for maybe 30 minutes, and he says to me, let's get a CT scan on you. And I'm like, okay, well, do I have to, like, you know, schedule an appointment for that? Where do I got to go? He says, no, we're just going to go right down the hall, three doors, make a left. What? Yeah. Took 5 minutes. 10 minutes later, the results were on the board. We got a plan of action. It turned out I had staph infection in my sinus. They had to surgically remove it. It was resistant to antibiotics since it never really went away. It did so much damage to my sinus cavity. My sinus was practically closed. with just all kinds of damaged tissue. They did a balloon sinuplasty. They opened up my airways so I could actually breathe again. Oh, and I had a deviated septum that I didn't even know about. They fixed that too. 3.5 years later, number of sinus infections, zero. Number of sinus headaches, also zero. And a really cool side effect to having your airways open, I used to be a really bad snorer. My kid used to call me the chainsaw. They could hear me outside, the doors closed. I don't snore anymore at all because my airways are no longer obstructed. I don't have sinus issues. I don't have snoring issues. And it's all thanks to Dr. Ben Salento at Texas Sinus and Snoring. So if you do have sinus or snoring issues, stop living like that. Go call Dr. Ben. Schedule a consultation. 346-413-9313. 346-413-9313. Go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Tell them I sent you by. All right, let's do a little Astros fill in the blank with B-Mac. B-Mac!
Yeah, so like you said, right before we went to the break this last time, we did it. I guess I actually found it because I was in the middle of posting a podcast. It was February 10th was the last time we did this, and it was regarding the Texans. But we're going to get into some Astros fill in the blank, kind of a quick way to get through lots of Astros questions in one segment instead of dragging out over an entire show. So first one up to you, Patrick.
He's not the best producer in the game for nothing, folks.
First one for you, Patrick. Blank is the next player the Astros must lock up long-term.
Ooh, that's a...
I mean, obviously the popular answer is Kyle Tucker. Now, you could go for what you hope versus what is realistic, or you could give us both answers, but blank is the next player the Astros must lock up long-term.
Well, they've already locked up Yordan, and they've already locked up Christian Javier.
Yeah.
Javier would have been the answer. I know that the popular answer is Tucker, but I don't think Tucker wants to be locked up long-term. I think he wants to go to free agency. So that's going to make life a little bit more difficult. If you have to have a willing partner as far as, you know, do you want to have a guy that's going to get locked up? Like, that guy has to want to take on that deal. So
do you think the Astros taking him to basically baseball court and trying to pay him $5 million versus $7 million will play any or do you think he was already out the door before that?
Well, here's the thing. Like, for the way that goes down, you have to keep in mind that years ago when Jeff Luhnow was still the GM, they were advised on how to handle arbitration cases. Major League Baseball has their own advisory committee that advises teams how to handle. And they basically taught the Astros to be what they call a file and trial team. File their number, don't talk to the guy until the arbitration case comes along. And then when it does, let's see how malleable they are to what you want to do, right? Considering are we taking age into consideration?
Yeah, like, yeah, I think you have to.
Because if we're taking age into consideration and locking guys in, so you're like buying out arbitration years.
Well, it doesn't even have to be just guys that are buying out arbitration years. I mean, obviously Bregman and Altuve only have I believe 2 years left in their contract each. So that could be just whoever you want to make sure is here past the next 2 years, I guess would be a different way to frame it.
Well, how about Framber Valdez?
That would be my answer as well.
Now, Framber's 29. He's going to make $6.8 million this year. He is potentially a Super 2. So he may or may not necessarily be arbitration eligible next year. He may, if he's a Super 2, he'll become a free agent. He is now the ace of the staff. That's a guy you kind of want to – you want your ace under contract.
Without question, that is the guy I want. Obviously, the biggest question for any of these guys is how much and how long. And considering you said Framber's 29 for some reason.
29.
I thought he was 28 for some reason. But either way, it doesn't really matter. I guess the question becomes how far are you willing to go with that? Because obviously there's been kind of the five-year rule that people talk about with the Astros. And for the most part, I agree with that, especially a guy who would be 29, especially for someone who pitches versus a position player. I agree with that even more so. So if you can get back Fromber on a 5-year deal that is equal to what generally aces make, I'd be fine with that. But anything beyond that, I would probably start to push back. I don't know where your comfort level is. But
I'd probably be okay with 6 years. Because Fromber is not a guy who throws super hard. And he is not a guy who is throwing like this obscene breaking stuff that has this crazy torque on his elbow.
Yeah, he's not out there like Tim Lincecum where you see his pitching motion and go, oh my God, that guy's going to break apart.
Yeah, how does his elbow turn inside out twice when he throws
exactly.
the ball? So Fromber
has an easy release.
And he just ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, ground ball. His mechanics, the style of pitcher he is, lends to being a guy who can be healthier long-term than guys who throw just ridiculous, super sharp, hard. Like, he's not throwing 94-mile-an-hour sliders. He's not throwing a curveball that starts behind your head and ends at your feet like it's a wiffle ball. He's not throwing 99 miles an hour. His delivery is kind of free and easy. His issues have been, you know, he took a ball off the hand. You know what I mean? I mean, Fromber... I feel pretty good about Fromber being healthy long term.
Yeah, and his game, I think you hit the nail on the head there. His game, that style of pitching, ages well better than the classic flamethrower.
Yeah, and
because to me, and I agree with you, his the way he gets people's out is more location than stuff. Not that he doesn't have good stuff, but if he keeps the sinker low with good movement, then you're just going to pound it into the dirt.
It's an art of pitching from an era gone by where it was about pitching to contact, getting ground balls, getting easy double plays, as opposed to have to make everybody miss. Everything has to be a swing and a miss. Got to have, you know, big velocity. Got to have obscene spin rate. There are so many guys, you go through like the 70s, 80s. All these guys were really good pitchers, just getting you to turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And now that the shift is no longer in play, you can't have, you know, the second baseman playing short right field and your shortstop playing second base and your third baseman, you know, half shortstop. Pitchers have to learn to pitch both sides of the plate. They got to learn how to get a guy to turn the ball over. Nobody already does it better than Fromber Valdez. That's the guy I would say. And with the caveat of Tucker does not want to be extended.
Sure.
He wants to hit free agency. Fromber is the guy I'd go for.
Yeah, Fromber would be my answer as well. All right, next one up. Blank will be the Astro player most impacted positively or negatively by the new rules, like the no shift, the pitch clock, bigger bases, etc.
Actually, as much as he's bitching about it, I think it'd be Kyle Tucker. Tucker, if you look at the last couple of years, his starts have been just unbelievably slow. It's not because he's got low exit velocity. It's not because he's striking out like a champion. His expected batting average is like 150 points higher than what he hits in April.
Yeah, someone who plays fantasy baseball, that is pointed out in April and May every single year. Like, hey, guys, trade for Kyle Tucker now because all his expected stats suggest he's going to turn this around any day now, and eventually he does.
You know, when I was younger, Bernie Williams was the guy to target every May 1st. Bernie didn't like cold weather, never, ever hit in April. We say, when the weather gets hot, so does Bernie Williams. And you could always, somebody would always draft Bernie Williams, in the fourth round, be frustrated as hell in the middle of April because he's hitting buck 30. And you just knew, I'm going to rake this guy over the coals, and he's not even going to know. And you trade for him, and May 28th, Bernie's hitting 325. Tucker is the same way. If you just take his April out, 275 hitter, just get him outside of that April, early, first week of May. But all his expected stats are so much higher than what his actual stats are because he hits the ball into the shift or hits the ball, 120 miles an hour right at an outfielder. He's a guy who I think will benefit a lot from no more shift. There'll be more open space for him. And when the ball comes over his bat 110 miles an hour, and you're playing second base, better have fast hands. You might need dental work.
So do you think that is enough of a boost for him to avoid the classic Kyle Tucker slow start in April?
I think it's possible. Let's see how he gets through March. But really, not having the shift.
He is playing for the World Baseball Classic, right? So he may be getting started in competitive baseball sooner. Maybe that has an effect, too, where we haven't seen that the last couple years.
Those rules are not in effect for the WBC.
That's true. Okay, that's a good point. But at least he's getting competitive. I guess spring training is
competitive. Yeah, he's
going to
ramp up a little faster.
Yeah, he's going to have a faster ramp up. Maybe that means what he usually does in late May and June comes a little bit earlier.
Hopefully.
All right, next one up, and this one I think is on the minds of all Astros fans. Lance McCullers will return blank.
Let's say May 25th.
Okay.
Because they don't need to push him. Right? They need Lance McCullers to pitch in September, October, not in April and May. And as we talked about earlier in the show, they have an off day every single week through June. You don't have to throw six pitchers to basically have the effect of a six-man rotation getting that extra day in. So as long as the schedule is favorable to you for the first 2 months of the season, you don't have to push it. Like I said, you can roll with J.P. France or Sean Dubin to make the occasional sixth start when you don't have the off day after just, 5 days or whatnot. But to give you an example, so the season starts on May 30th, right? They're home against the White Sox. March 30th. All right. Their first off day is April 7th. So they're going to play 8 games in a row to start the season. Then they're off on that Friday. Play 5 games, off. 6 games, off. 6 games, off. Guess what happens as the calendar flips over to May?
More off days on Thursday?
6 games, off. It's almost like the minor league schedule. They're off every Thursday for April through May, and then when you get into June, that's when the schedule starts to condense down. So if they can get Lance McCullers Jr. back in the mix, say, May 26th, because that's the 25th is their last every Thursday off day. And then the 26th kind of starts when they start getting into like 14, 15 days in a row. If he can come back for, let's say, that series, which is either the series in Oakland that starts May 26th or home against the Twinkies May 29th, those series, if he's ready to go by then, they're clear.
So, and starting against Oakland would be a nice way to ease back into Major League Baseball by facing a minor league team.
Man, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. All right, let's get another one in here quickly before the break. Blank will be the number two hitter for the Astros. At two hole, not like second best. Because I think there's been, obviously, Jeremy Pena was someone that was hitting lower, got moved up, and had great success. But Michael Brantley, before, had classically been the number two hitter for the Astros. And I think there are a number of other candidates to hit number two as well. With kind of the new age, let's get everybody up in the lineup as quick, as early as we can, and not necessarily stat guys, 4, 5, 6.
So the logical answer to this is Michael Brantley, because Brantley is a 300 hitter, like a 360 on base, and you want guys who are high contact, low strikeout, high on base guys in that spot, in between Altuve and Yordan. Look, you want guys on base for Yordan Alvarez. So the guy who gets on base more often makes more sense. However, we don't know if Michael Brantley is going to be healthy and ready to go. And if Brantley is not necessarily ready to go, then it would make sense that Dusty's going to leave Jeremy Pena in that slot where Pena kind of took off the very end of the season and through the postseason, batting in that two-hole. Look, he got into there, a week or two before the end of the season?
Yeah, it wasn't long.
And then has the big at-bat in the first game against Seattle where he was down 0-2, got that slider low and away
drove
that he swings
right up the middle.
Every time, and he laid off. And then the next slider caught too much of the plate, and he banged it back up the middle. But that 0-2 pitch... I want to say that was off Paul Sewald. That 0-2 pitch, that slider off the plate, he waved and whiffed at that all year long. And he finally, in the biggest moment of his career to that date, laid off. And the next pitch caught too much of the edge of the plate, and he banged it up the middle, and then Yordan has the historic home run. Then, of course, game three, 18 innings, and he has the walk-off home run. His confidence just exploded from there, and then he's ALCS MVP, and he's World Series MVP. So the issues with Peña are the pitch recognition has to be better. He's got to recognize that slider going off the plate, and he's got to let it be. He can't keep waving at that pitch. If he hits 250, 260 with 25 homers as a Gold Glove shortstop, you're not going to complain. But if his on base is 285, yeah, you're going to complain. He's got to learn to take some walks. And that means pitch recognition, plate discipline, not swinging at the garbage when you got two strikes on you. He can do that. He can be a two-hole guy because his average will go up, his on-base will go up, and he is maybe the fastest guy on the team.
Yeah, that's one aspect that I'm kind of torn on this because Peña's speed certainly is an advantage over Brantley, but in Brantley's favor, this is something that was kind of a thing in the past, going way back to when the Astros were in the National League, but you always used to, in the past, like to have a good contact left-handed hitter in that two-hole. If you had somebody speedy at the top of the lineup, they get on first base, and now if the first baseman's having to hold on that speedy runner, Altuve, in this situation, then you've got a bigger gap there. Well, obviously, the shifting took that away, but with shifting being banned, in theory, now you have that big gap there on the right side of the infield for Brantley to hit it through. But the downside of Brantley there is just the speed. I mean, it seems like a disadvantage to have somebody as slow as Brantley clogging the bases right there in front of Yordan, in front of Tucker, in the heart of that lineup. Well, is that much of a concern for you?
He's not slow. He's just average. He's not Maldonado on the bases. But, yeah, he's not – Brantley's not a fast runner.
Well, I mean, I just –
And when he,
you
when
want
that
somebody
ankle,
there that can take the extra base, that can go first to third, that can score from second on a single. And maybe Brantley you still believe is that guy, but I have my concerns there.
I think the ball would have to be really deep for him to go in first to third.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons to like Brantley there in the two-hole. You mentioned the on-base percentage. I mentioned the big gap there on the right side with no shifting anymore. I just worry about him clogging the bases.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about clogging the bases when Yordan hits at 450
feet.
That's
fair. All right.
Yordan is not going to hit a whole lot of 86-foot dribblers.
No, he didn't. He's not getting paid because of that.
And he's certainly not fast either. But the lineup becomes a question, because if you're going to keep Altuve in the leadoff spot, then either you're going to go back-to-back righties before Yordan, or you're going to go back-to-back lefties after Altuve. So you're going to have guys hitting from the same side of the plate somewhere at the top of the lineup. If I'm going to do that, I'd like to do it with the higher on-base guy. Again, if Jeremy Peña has a spring training where he's got a, 340 on base, that's not ideal. I mean, it's not that great, but it obviously would be a huge improvement from him from a year ago. If you see that kind of improvement, probably okay with letting him hit in the two spot and then let Brantley hit down in the order where he'll get some RBI opportunities. But Peña has to show better plate discipline to be in the two-hole long-term.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Christo Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
We were talking earlier about, if they're trending, are they dead? Steven Silas is trending. It's not dead.
Is his defense trending? Because that certainly died.
Died long ago.
We haven't talked about it yet, but obviously Dame Lillard, what, 71 last night?
His job is not dead yet. I don't know about his career.
I wish I had it in front of me, but there was a list of all the, like, the crazy single-player point totals put up this year against the Rockets. The list is long and quite embarrassing if you're a fan of the Rockets.
Alpi Şengün is trending. Nothing bad, though. Nothing bad on Şengün. Nothing bad.
So you're reporting he's still alive?
Reporting
is that
he
report?
Is alive.
Should I hit the breaking news sounder to tell everyone he's still alive?
He is, in fact, alive.
This has been Dead or Alive with Patrick Creighton.
Bryce Young trending.
I'm at the edge of my seat here for you to tell me if he's still alive or not.
He is alive.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad we got that settled.
Although there are some people who are currently thinking that he will go in the draft after Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, I can't see that happening.
There are some drugs being done by many, many people in America if they think Anthony Richardson is going before Bryce Young.
I will say, and I think the idea is ludicrous to take Richardson in front of Bryce Young, but it only takes one, as we saw from Johnny Manziel being drafted in the first round, as we saw from Tim Tebow being drafted in the first round. It only takes one lunatic to screw this up. Well, so I'm not going to say... I'm not going to say the odds are 0%. They should be low because Bryce Young is a much better quarterback. But it only takes one guy to fall in love with the size and the tools and think they could turn him into the next Josh Allen.
Jimmy Haslam, who has kind of single-handedly taken the Browns from laughingstock to extreme laughingstock.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
Is buying the controlling interest in the Milwaukee Bucks. Rip Giannis.
Yeah. Yeah, thoughts and prayers, Giannis.
Rip Giannis. Rip Bucks. It's all over. Why he's trying to buy a basketball team when he has a football team. Football is licensed to print money. Why you are now trying to buy a basketball team when you can't even get the NFL right. Like I said, the NFL is licensed to print money. Yeah, what are you doing? This is... I'm so rich. I don't know what to do with my money. You know what the price tag was? He didn't even buy 100% of the team. Price tag, $3.5 billion.
Does he have a majority share?
Yes.
Okay.
But 3.5 B's for the Bucks?
Yeah.
That's not the Clippers.
No, that's not a franchise.
That's not the Nets.
Right. I mean, if you're going to invest that sort of money, I would hope it would be in a franchise that you have faith in that could print money once the star is gone. That's not a franchise that's printing money. I mean, the Bucks historically have not been a franchise that's, to my knowledge at least, been on the upper end of profitable teams in the NBA because they just haven't had a whole lot of success. So once Giannis is gone, whenever that day comes, yeah, I don't know how much they're going to be printing money when that day comes.
So... I had this discussion about baseball, right? When they talk about big market, small market.
Yeah, yeah, but about how much money teams get before they even open the doors.
Right. Now, the smallest market in Major League Baseball is the Milwaukee Brewers.
Are they really? Okay.
They are the smallest market team. Milwaukee is market 37. Now, would you call a top 40 market, quote, small?
No, I wouldn't.
But baseball acts like... anything that's not New York, L.A., Boston, Chicago is small market. No, you don't have any teams in, like, Altoona. All right? Every team you have is top 37 market. There's mega markets. But Milwaukee is still a big market. It's just not a mega market. Here are the, like, when you get to, like, okay, so New York is market one. And L.A. is market 2. Chicago is 3. Philly is 4. Dallas is 5. San Fran, Oakland is 6. So I always get a kick out of, well, Oakland's a small market. No, it's the 6th biggest market in the country. They're just paupers. They have a lousy building. their billionaire owners with $5 billion won't spend the money to build his own building. He keeps trying to get the government to pay for it. These are five freaking B's. They have money. They just act like they don't. Atlanta is 7. Houston is 8. D.C. is 9. Boston is 10. Boston is 10. They act like they're 3. Boston is 10. Phoenix, Seattle, Tampa, Minnesota, well, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Detroit, Denver, Orlando, Miami, Cleveland. Cleveland is top 20. Small market, though. Just ask Larry Dolan, who owns the Cleveland now Guardians. We're a small market team, lowest payroll. Market 19. Sacramento, Portland, Charlotte, St. Louis, Raleigh-Durham, Indy. Pittsburgh is market 26. San Diego is market 27. What is San Diego paying in salary? What is Pittsburgh paying in salary? They are equivalent markets. The idea of we are too small a market, we can't spend, is total BS. But Milwaukee is basically the smallest market in baseball. The only markets smaller in the NFL is Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jacksonville, I would have guessed. Is Milwaukee the smallest market in the NBA?
No.
Or that'd be Sacramento?
That would be Memphis.
Memphis, okay, yeah.
In the NBA, they have OKC at 44, New Orleans is 50, Memphis is 51. Those are the smallest markets with pro teams.
And those are still massive cities.
Still big markets.
Yeah.
So, the fact that, you know, like Milwaukee, not a huge market, and the teams in that state, in that city, in Milwaukee, they're usually, you know, if they're in Wisconsin or they're in Milwaukee, they kind of do the, you know, we're a small market thing. Although the Bucks this year are paying the third most luxury tax in the NBA. They're paying the third most luxury tax, $70 million bucks. But now, new owner.
Small market.
Let's see how long it takes him to screw it up. Because that train is just never freaking late. All right, let's Texans are going to draft at 2-12. I have a mock draft up a couple days ago. Second mock draft that I've done at GallerySports.com. But BMAC asks an interesting question. Is it a guarantee that the Texans are 100% going to take a wide receiver at 12? Maybe they do. He's got questions. Let's figure it out next.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, so my latest mock draft that came out over the weekend at Gallery Sports, I had the Texans taking a pair of former teammates. C.J. Stroud at 2, Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 12, reuniting the quarterback and wide receiver that broke every Rose Bowl record imaginable in 2022, January of 2022, when they just went absolutely nuts and Stroud threw for 570-something yards and 6 touchdowns.
Was that 2022 or the 2023 game against Georgia?
No, it's the 2022 Rose Bowl. So after the 21 season.
Okay.
And Smith and Jigba had 15 catches on 347 yards and 3 touchdowns. But BMAC poses a question. What if the Texans don't take a receiver? What other options are you looking at here, BMAC?
So the reason I ask this question is not because I don't think they need to upgrade their wide receivers. They obviously do. I mean, the popular opinion, and I agree with it, is that Brandon Cooks will be traded, and that potentially leaves you with Nico Collins in their wide receiving room. So they certainly have to bring some people in and some very talented people in if you're going to develop the quarterback. But I think this wide receiver class is a wide receiver class that doesn't incentivize going wide receiver at the very top. This isn't a Calvin Johnson. This is not an Andre Johnson. This is not a Jamar Chase type draft. You've got a lot of talent there, but to me, it's kind of grouped towards later first, second round. And so when I look at this wide receiver class, I see guys like Jalin Hyatt, Josh Downs, projected to be there in the second round. You have guys like Zay Flowers, and depending on who you talk to, you even see guys like the guy you just mentioned being taken at 12, Jackson Smith and Jigba being there in the later first, to where the Texans could potentially package 33 and move back up. I don't think it'd be that expensive if you're talking about moving from 33 to maybe, say, 28 to get the wide receiver you like. So I think there's a ton of wide receiver depth there to afford you the ability to just wait and get that spot either by trading up into the first or at 33. And so then if you do that, I think the two choices for me are either take one of the top offensive tackles, whether it be Paris Johnson or the kid from Northwestern,
Peter Skoronski.
Yes, Skoronski. Because I don't think the Texans are going to be in a position to pay both their tackles. One of the tackles is going to be on his way out, and I think it benefits the Texans to have a tackle they draft this year. Maybe you play him inside to bolster the inside of the offensive line this year, bump him out next year. Or, I mean, their top pass rusher last year was a guy that was barely younger than us. So I think that the other position would be go ahead and take whoever you believe is the top pass rusher at that point. Obviously, it won't be Will Anderson. It won't be the kid from Texas Tech. But you got the kid from Iowa. I'm blanking on his name here at the moment. Lucas Van Ness. Yeah, Lucas Van Ness. Sorry, I blanked on it there. But I think pass rusher or offensive lineman really improves, if not the Texans' biggest need, because the biggest need is quarterback. It's got to be there in the top three. It's certainly top five. Whereas the wide receiver depth will still be there later in the draft for the Texans to take somebody to help whoever they take a quarterback.
You sound like you read my first mock draft, where I had Peter Skoronski going to the Texans. The reason that I've changed it for the second draft is, one, I'm feeling more and more that Skoronski will not make it to 12. And also, this thought process. We know Laremy Tunsil wants to reset the market and be the highest paid tackle. Titus Howard doesn't necessarily want to reset the market, but he wants to get paid. When you have a young quarterback, having established tackles who don't give up sacks is important. The idea being, hey, you know what? If they took Skoronski and Skoronski's versatile enough, you could play him inside for a year and then move him outside when you ultimately choose which tackle you're going to keep. But free agent wide receivers this year are hot dog. And you know what comes after that. It rhymes with hit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the best guy is what, Jacoby Myers?
Whatever's left of OBJ, who is not a target, because if OBJ is not on a team that has a chance to win, he's going to be a problem. So OBJ is not even a target for the Texans because they're not good enough to keep him from being a distraction. And then you're talking about someone like Juju Smith-Schuster, who benefited from having Patrick Mahomes as quarterback last year. He's a third receiver is what he is.
Yeah, he definitely took a hit in Pittsburgh after Antonio Brown left.
Now, when
he benefited from not receiving the double coverage.
When the Texans, should the Texans trade Brandon Cooks, they will eat about $11 million in dead cap. So it's going to hurt to trade him. That's why I think it's more important to trade him to a team that will absorb his $18 million salary than to trade him to a team that might give you a third-round pick if you eat all the salary. Get the fifth-round pick, get rid of him. With taking the receiver at 12, you've got potentially a number one receiver on an affordable contract for the next 5 years. with the way the salary cap keeps going up, you probably can afford to pay both your tackles because your star receiver is cheap. The other guys in the receiver room, Nico Collins, often hurt, John Metchie III coming back from having leukemia, and likely they bring back, I just drew a blank on his name, Chris.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank too.
The fourth receiver who they had. But anyhow, I see them bringing him. I see them bringing him back to be like a fourth receiver. He fits good into that role. So I'm not Chris Moore. So I think Chris Moore is if he's your fourth receiver, he can stretch the field. And he's shown you when you give him some playing time, he'll produce. So I think Chris Moore, they find a way to bring Chris Moore back. You got four receivers. And then you can either look to get another guy in the draft or, you know, you find somebody who winds up on the out looking in when teams start cutting rosters down and whatnot. But that is kind of why I changed from take the tackle to change the receiver. It seems that they may be more inclined to move Brandon Cooks and eat the money. If they do that, then the wide receiver actually becomes more important than potentially a third tackle this year because they desperately need receivers. If you're going to go get a young quarterback, you've got to have weapons for him, and you got to protect him. So the two bookend tackles, Larry Tunsil gave up one sack last year. Titus Howard gave up three, and two of them came when they played guard. So having your tackle set and going out and getting a star receiver, especially one that your young quarterback may already have a rapport with. That was my thought process on that. Don't necessarily disagree with yours, but that's why I've kind of changed the thought process on it. All right, we're back on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. Thursday at 7, back here for more late hits. Appreciate my man Sean Higgs joining us earlier. BMAC on the other side of the glass. Our texters, tweeters, and twitchers. We'll see you Thursday. H-Town!